Thanks, Bill, for that introduction. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah, okay.
You should have two handouts. I'll just do a bit of housekeeping before anything else. You should have two handouts. One with a picture of a house on the front. And one that says Gant's financial timetable. It's coming.
Oh, right.
While we're handing that out, I might get underway. I just would like to draw upon the previous speaker made a comment where she said 40% of wealth in America has been destroyed. You all remember that comment, okay? And I'm sure some of us felt it too. It wasn't wealth in the first place. What was destroyed was a claim upon wealth. Now, if you don't understand that difference, then I think you're going to get an enormous amount of value and use out of my presentation over the coming half an hour. Okay, so remember that, we'll come full circle, we'll come back to that a little bit later. Can I get a hands up from people as well, so I get a bit of an idea of who I'm talking to as well? Hands up who still uses a broker, pretty much, like... Okay. Put your hands up again if you had a broker that told you to expect a downturn, a savage downturn in 2008. Who had one of them? Okay. Could I begin, perhaps, by addressing some of the confusion that probably exists in our minds at the moment about the economy right now? Perhaps some of us feel that things in the world might get worse before they improve. Some of us might think we've hit bottom. Some of us probably have no idea. That's all fine. No problem with not having any idea. I also know that some of us are probably rather sceptical of economists forecasting future economic behaviour. So I consider myself economist. Could I get agreement with you, though, how useful it would have been to have known that the 2008-2009 downturn that we've had, how useful it would have been to know it in advance that it was coming? You agree with me there? It would have been useful.
Very useful.
Okay. I'd also like to suggest, I run my own business called Economic Indicator Services. I'm completely independent. My business, Economic Indicator Services, is my sideline. It's my great passion. I've always had an interest in forecasting. I've been doing that since I was 12, trying to understand whether you can forecast the future. I trade for a living. In fact, actually, I've been doing that for about 20 years now. I'm retired, essentially, and so I give over a lot of my stuff now to doing research, particularly research on WBN. What I do, I teach people to remember the future. That's what I do. And I've got three parts to my presentation today. I'm going to talk about the 18 to 20 year real estate cycle. I'm going to talk about WD Gant's 18.6 year measurement. And I'm going to talk about why I think the next cycle of approximately 18 years, why I think that will be even bigger than the one we've just been through now. So if you consider what my purpose is today, I guess, I'm going to try and show you how you could have known this downturn was coming. Of course, this is how I knew. So, you know, it's all very well to get speeches and talks and go along and hear everybody else's opinion, but how do you actually know, or indeed can you know, how can you actually know what's coming next in the economy? All right, well, this is how I knew. Back in the pre-internet dinosaur age, I read a book back in 1989, 1990, thereabouts. It was a book called The Power in the Land by Fred Harrison. The book was published in 1983, and it was written about 18-year real estate cycles. Now, published in 1983, in that book, Fred, who I've subsequently become a very good friend of mine, Fred forecast that the UK economy would go into a fairly significant boom into the end of the 1980s, this boom would peak, and then the US economy would go into a savage recession, which happens approximately every 18 years. That book impressed me because as I read through the book, it was actually happening. Not only did he say it would happen, he actually gave the years and how it would unfold. To me, that was impressive. Now, I was thinking about that at the time, and I thought to myself, if I could, because I wasn't then really, our family's a real estate family, but I wasn't really in the real estate. My profession was the stock market. And I thought to myself, if I can apply that to the stock market, I can retire early. I wouldn't have to do anything else. So there's some of what I was thinking as I was going through the book. So you can see, after having read the book, I thought, okay, I'm not a cynical person, but I do have a lot of healthy skepticism. I would consider myself a skeptic. I thought, it can't really be that easy with what Fred Harrison was saying. So what I did, Fred wrote about the UK. So what I did, I went and researched American real estate. Now, that was, of course, it's very easy now to go ahead and get on the internet and do all your research. But in those days, in 1991, 92, when I set up my office in Ross House, and I've been there quite a while now, if you wanted to get a book from the US, you had to go to the state library here, and you had to then ask them if it was in the Library of Congress or some US library. They then had to send a letter across to the US, then they'd get a reply, then they'd send you the book. This would take 6 weeks, you'd be waiting. Anyway, I got a book that came to me, which I had a look at, and I graphed land sales of the US government, and that's what I found. Absolutely, I was astonished. What I found was, we are measuring here the US government, public land sales to its public from 1800 onwards, because that was when land in the US was first formalized and the government held it and started selling it off to US citizens. Every 18 years, there was a peak in land sales followed by a savage recession. That interested me to go ahead and do some further research, because I thought, well, it's obvious, isn't it? Because if that sort of pattern would keep going, you'd think to yourself, well, you could be prepared for the next one. I continued to do my research, because, especially of the US, because the US stock market went into all-time new highs so early in the real estate cycle. That tells you, or that was telling you at the time, that the US was going to have a very big asset bubble, because a lot of new wealth was being produced, and the US stock market went into all-time new highs in 1995, when everybody started to get really bullish. Telling very early in the cycle, telling you what's coming. I also thought that if I had research on the US, since it's a much bigger market than Australia, the research would probably be more valuable for me, because the US is a bigger market. As I was going through my research, I also discovered that most economists, in fact all economists, they don't know how the economy works. They can't tell you. Now, let me explain that. Economists will recall, you know, all the booms and busts that we've been through. They delight in recalling the Dutch tulip mania of 1636, the South Sea bubble of the 1720s, and in more recent times, the internet investment bubble of the 1990s. Because it's got rogue characters and it turns out to be awesome busts that turn eventually to boom. Those types of events, they are random. Your economic toolbox, it won't pick up on that sort of stuff. But the financial crisis that broke in 2007 is fundamentally different. That sort of crisis, it is predetermined by the structure of the economy. The crisis that we've just been through is proof that the capitalist economy, based on the rent, is actually working and functioning properly. Because the boom and bust scenario, it is inbuilt. It is the DNA of the economy. The economy does actually, if you remember nothing else of my talk today, just remember that. The economy does actually have a scientific foundation, and it's based on what is called the economic rent. This was a concept first formalised by English economist David Ricardo. The economic rent is to economics what gravity is to science. Now, going back again, back to the previous speaker, I'm not intentionally trying to single out the previous speaker, but it gives an illustration of what economists go through, the extent of the normal application of economists. See, nobody anywhere in the world, stockbrokers, economists, they do not measure the economic rent. There's only one country in the world that measures the rental value of its land. That's Australia. No other country in the world bothers to do that. That, if you want to know what's coming next, all you have to do is measure the economic rental value of a nation's land, of a nation's resources, its land. That is the leading indicator. And it goes in 18-year cycles, or it has in the past. Now, I was doing this for 95, 97, remember? So I thought to myself, okay, if I know that already, I should be able to forecast the next sort of moves. Now, I don't have time today, I wish I did, I don't have the time to go into this economic rent concept. I guarantee for everybody in the room, I would single-handedly guarantee it's probably a new concept. It's very simple to understand. It's like riding a bike. Once you understand it, you can never forget it. But it is something that I can't... Maybe forget a couple of questions on it, and I'll see how we go. What that led me to formulate is a real estate clock. I did that after reading... A bit hard to see there. Fred Harrison, Homer Hoyt, and Roy Wensley, all of whom studied in great detail what is called the 18-year real estate cycle. Roy Wensley did that in 1933-32. Homer Hoyt put out a beautiful book, 100 Years of Land Values in Chicago. Anybody read it? One. Absolutely fundamental book to read. You must read that book. Fred Harrison's book, you must read it. If you want to understand what's coming next, you have to know about land value. That was done in the 1930s, since we've forgotten. So, I have a clock here. You'd all be familiar with that clock, I assume. Most of you have seen that before. But it doesn't tell you the timing. It sort of tells you 10 years, but it doesn't tend to forecast that every second 10 years, you get a bigger boom and bust. So if we go back to the original, to what I formulated, I did this back in 2005. If we start on the inner circle here, you get ready for the next boom, you get the net rents rising, which means once the rents of existing buildings rise, it becomes cheaper to build new buildings, which is what developers go and do. That leads to a rapid expansion in construction. That means banks start lending more, you get easy credit. Increased building activity starts to absorb vacant land. You get a land boom. That then drives you into the second half of the cycle. A land boom. When you get a land boom, you know a land boom's happening because you start to see the world's tallest buildings. Lavish government spending always comes out at the top. Real estate activity frenetic, the peak. That's when absolutely nobody's got any concerns at all about the economy. Blue sky. Nobody's worried. That's how you know it's at the top. Activity slackens, confidence remains high, foreclosures and bankruptcies increase. That all happened in the US through 2006. The stock market then enters a bear market from past all-time highs. That's a good one to know. You then get credit creation, institutions, all the banks, they start to reverse policies. Economic activity stalls, you get a wipeout of debt, stagnation, which is about where the rest of the world is at the moment. I can tell you, as the world's tallest building was being built, as all this was happening, well, myself and my subscribers, we had a fairly good idea of this clock and where we were headed. That has been happening in that order, because Homer Hoyt described it first back in 1933. That's been happening since 1800 in the US, every single cycle. So history tends to repeat. Now, I won't go, again, without too much time, I can't go through that completely, but there's a book which I wrote about it, 18 Year Cycles, and there's details there. You would have got a card about it that tells you how to follow that up if you're interested. You may care to write down on the clock, because the clock is in the book. But if you've got a bit of pen and paper, just a loose bit of paper, you might, at the top, so at the top here, around about 14, 15 o'clock, 1818, 1836, 1854, 1869, 1888, 1908, 1926, 1944, 1970, 1989, 1988, 1989, 2006. Quite has been so far a reasonably forecastable progression. I'd also like to say that you probably heard it a lot, that the recent downturn, the recent global financial crisis, how serious it's been. But I just think we forget our history. Because in my humble view, the recent crisis we've just been through is nowhere near as serious as what the 1991 downturn was and 1974, 1932, nowhere near as serious. We've actually got off quite lightly, really. I know America's been well down, but now, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist and everything, but it is in the interests of government, and it is in the interests of banks to tell you that things are worse than they are. Because the governments then very quickly run to bail them out. So I urge you, get on the internet at some point and have a look, try and have a look at a bit of an opposing point of view about some of those banks. Anyway, I'll go through all that in my book. What makes the boom really boom? What makes it go right over the top is the extent to which banks are permitted to create credit. Events this cycle, the cycle we've just been through, they were absolutely nothing new. I've got here a chart which is in the book. Number of banks on the left-hand side, loans outstanding, right-hand side, you have the number of banks is the pink line. Loans outstanding, that means their credit creation, is the blue line. Can you see how in the last 5 or 6 years of each cycle, going into 1837, for example, and then going into the late 1850s, there is an explosion of bank credit towards the end of the cycle. This puts the real estate cycle right over the top. Happened in the 1830s, happened in the 1850s. I've got graphs in the book to take you through every single cycle to show you how it's the same. Do you think we've just been through that same process? Especially in the US. In the US is what I wrote my book on. That's where it all happens. And whatever happens in the US, I think you'd agree, pretty much happens everywhere else in the world. They tend to lead things. Okay? Every single cycle, the US has led the world into it, and the US has again led the world out. So you can expect to happen the same thing to happen in the US. So, that was a forecast, that's from the website, just to show you that back in January 2003, I said to subscribers I thought the real estate cycle would run its full 18 years again. Back in 2003, we had Australian property developer stocks, they were near new highs, trending up, FKP, ATR, Villawood, so there was plenty of things happening. I also, if I can go back to start there again, part of this talk, certainly the first half you've heard already, Silvana Eccles, I think I spoke up in Brisbane like the previous 3 years. I don't know why that happened really, because I don't live in Brisbane, but I also spoke to the Sydney North Shore of the Australian Investors Association. So if you want to go and view some of those past talks, they're on the website. If you go to past conference speeches, they're all freely accessible. If you go there, you'll be able to see the past talks that I gave, pretty much of what you're seeing now. You'll be able to click on a conference speech and be able to go there and have a look yourself. This brings me to the second part of my talk. Can I ask who's heard of W.D. Gantt? Could you put your hand up for me? Very good. So I'm talking to people that would have a little bit of an idea about it. You should have your handout in front of you, which is just a one-page handout, Gantt's Financial Timetable. And I'll just do this briefly. In 1909, I should first mention a little bit about WD, I guess. For those of you who haven't heard of him, he's a man you should try and follow. He was considered one of Wall Street's great traders from about 1900 to about 1950 or thereabouts. He produced some forecasting courses right through the 1920s, 30s and 40s that sold for more than $5,000 in his day. He had quite a number of people getting those forecasts. Of course, a Model T in those days was worth $400. That gives you an idea of what he used to charge for some of his very high quality stuff that just he would not permit to get out into the public reach. It's rumoured that he made a lot of money in the market. Nobody knows how much. Nobody knows whether he made anything at all. But he was, before he had a business that would teach other people how to forecast, before he had that, he was America's first citizen that ever had a private plane. And that was pilot, was a woman pilot that he used to have, that he used to take him around all of the American crops so that he could see what was being produced, because he felt he could forecast commodity prices better once he could see the crops on the ground. So he must have been making money in the market to be able to do that. He called, it was an aluminium, new type of aluminium plane that used to ferry him around. So he must have known a little bit about what he was doing. In 1909, he published what he considered to be one of his greatest discoveries. And it was what he considered was an economy, an American economy that runs in 18.6 year cycles. So, I'm going to need a copy to take you through that. Let's get to the slide of it. There we go. I have up in front of us a picture of the Dow Jones running from approximately 1910 through to 1935. Kelvin, can I just get one copy? That'd be good.
So people have got a copy?
Yes, okay. You might see there, and I'll just take you through this briefly. Gann produced it in 1909. If you go backwards from about 1896, where he's got labels of K, roughly, you can see going back from there, 1896, 1878, 1859, 1842, 1841, 1822, 1804, or thereabouts. Now, of course, they were all very serious downturns in the US. They were times of quite punishing depression. What got me started, or what got me interested in this particular document, was because I was finding the same thing when I was researching my 18 to 20 year real estate cycle. So I thought, okay, well, I'll pigeonhole it, and I'll come back to it when I study the stock market more. But have a look with his legend, and we'll go there from, the slide I've got up from 1914. So this is, from Gann's point of view, when he published it first, this is a forecast of what he thought the economy and the Dow would do over coming years. And you've got there 1914, 1915, A, extreme low stock prices, repression, despair, beginning of a new business generation for the next 18 and three-fifths year. So you have a look at 1915, you can see down there, very low stock prices. Moving forward, he then said after that 4 years of rising stock prices, you get to 1919, high stock prices. B, you have a look at 1919, that's what we've got. He then suggested 1921, after that there'd be the usual recession and panic. 1921, there we go. 1922, D, low stock prices. Well, that's probably wrong. It was 1921, 1922 we were recovering. 1924, E, high stock prices. That's what we've got. They're certainly higher than they were. You then get 1925, F, he says, a panic. Well, we had one right at the end of 1925, but prices really went up there, so I don't know whether you can call that right or wrong or whatever. 1927, G, low stock prices. Well, I think you'd have to say that was wrong. But if you end up studying Gann's work after that, he said that despite there being 18.6 cycles, he said the major cycle is one of 60 years. And the 1920s were coming into the end of a 60-year period, and that's where the booms go right over the top. So he would have been aware of that. And then he suggests, he comes forward, 1928, H, very high stock prices. And as you can see, we all know what happened after that. Now, again, I go through some of this in my book. I've given you the handout, so if you have some of that data, you can trace that through onwards for yourself. Okay? Now, I'd like to leave it there because it can get a bit overwhelming for many people and a little bit hard to believe. Okay, so I don't want to labour some of these points. But for my subscribers, when you get up towards 1998, 1989 and thereabouts, that last column there, it's now 100 years since Gann put out that document. At the top of the document there, you've got, you've spread between 18 and 19 year cycles. It's exactly 18.6. By the time you get 100 years forward, it's slightly out. It needed to be adjusted a little bit, which I've done and which is on the website, which I show for subscribers. I can assure you, I've worked out how to date it now going forward, so all my subscribers get to see, and it's something that they can put and test for themselves just to see how far going forward. But I can tell you now, we've had 2009 when it's readjusted, it called the bottom. According to this document, we should now have 4 years of gradually rising stock market prices, and the GFC, according to this document, would indicate that it is over. Okay, we'll come back to that if you've got any questions.
If you want to go a little bit more into that,
If you want to make a note, does anybody, Regina, when I spoke up in Sydney, Regina Mino was in the audience. Some of you would know Regina, I think. She's written very good books about technical analysis. Yeah. Regina asked me to, after I gave this talk, Regina asked me to write an article for the International Federation of Technical Analysis, her journal, IFTA Journal 10. If you get yourself a copy of the IFTA Journal for 2010, there's a four-page article in it from me, follows up on the 18.6-year cycle. It gives you a little bit about how to go forward with that. So I urge you to get a copy of that. You'll find that quite interesting reading. This brings me to part three, final part, before we take questions. What time have I got? Where are we at? So we're at 8:45. Okay, I'll be finished in a couple of minutes. Final slide, my last comment. Anybody heard of Nikolai Kondratiev? Oh, good. Nikolai Kondratiev was a Russian economist who, in 1925, was asked by his boss, Comrade Stalin, to try and work out for him when Western capitalist economies would collapse. And when it was that the communist system would take over. And so, diligently, Nikolai went away, because he was in charge of the agricultural bureau in Moscow, so he had in his hand a lot of statistics that he could have started to graph. He went away diligently and started to record and backtest and try and find all of the prices of commodities. So he was looking at wheat, he looked at pig iron, he looked at beans, he looked at a whole series of things. And what he discovered was that Western economies, commodity prices, showed a very clear 54 to 60 year cycle. Roughly about 30 years up, roughly about 25 years down. And up to Nikolai's time in 1925, every time commodity prices saw major lows, the Western world went into a major depression. So in 1926, Nikolai wrote a book, and he forecast to Comrade Stalin that yes, capitalist economies, they would collapse after 1929, and you would see the world's worst depression. That's what he forecast. Very good forecast. It's in his book, which you can read. It was subsequently translated into English in 1932 by Joseph Schumpeter. Very interesting reading. Unfortunately, for him at least, he then forecast to Comrade Stalin that the Western economies would recover stronger than ever, as they always had. And this is something Comrade Stalin didn't want to hear. And he was accused of being the leader of the Workers' Peasant Party, and very sadly he was shipped off to Siberia, where he died in solitary confinement. We know he died in solitary confinement because he was named by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago. So there's a bit of history for you, okay? I actually started my business back in 1991. I started my business based on Kondratiev waves. It wasn't anything else, because I was trying to make long-term forecasts, which I was doing for various companies that bought my service, of which MIM, in the old days, MIM was one. There's quite a few big mining companies that were all interested in this sort of detail. And so that's what we were doing. I determined from there also, I did a bit of work on social history, and I found that economies do indeed have that type of scenario, and they do go generally from commodity price bottoms, they do tend to go up. Commodity prices, the Western economies tend to go up for about 30 years, they then plateau for a little while, then they have their downside of the commodity prices, and they seem to go into sort of a dullness and a depression. So, this particular diagram came from a presentation I did back in 1995, which again is on the website, where you'll see this document. That's why you've got question marks back there. I felt that if we followed that pattern, we'd end up getting commodity prices bottoming in around about the year 2000, 2003, from which we would start a new commodity price wave, which would take us to about the year 2030. I still have that view. It's been a really good call to suggest that commodities would bottom around that time. When they do, if commodity prices, I think they'll continue. But what was important from my point of view was, on the upside of these commodity price waves, which are about 30 to 32, thereabouts, they don't stop on a certain day, you can't price them like that. on the upside of the waves, the real estate cycles and the bottoms of the real estate troughs are never as serious as on the downside of the waves. It also often depends on whether a country is a resource producer or whether it's a resource buyer. America is a resource buyer. They tend to have trouble when commodity prices go up because they're having to buy high, they're having to buy resources at higher and higher prices. Nikolai Kondratiev was unable to ascertain why this cycle happens. I'm not sure I have the answer either, but what it does tell you is that on the upside of a K-wave, because resources get higher and higher, those are countries in control that want to control those resources that don't have any, like the US, you will see that it does lead to more conflict. Okay? I'm quite sure the Americans, they've still yet to understand why the good Lord put America's oil under Saudi soil. I don't think they quite understand yet. So, that's probably about all I can say there, except to say, it's my view. I think the next 18-year cycle is going to be one of the biggest Australia has ever seen, if not the biggest. I think there will be more wealth created in the next 20 years than the world has ever seen before in its entire history. I just don't see how you can be, and you cannot be bullish about what's happening in China. Now, I know everybody's got views on that sort of stuff, but and I don't know whether you can what you can believe in papers these days and all sorts of things. But here was one report which came over about Beijing losing the war over the internet. Every day last year, there was an average of 221,000 Chinese a day getting on the internet for the first time. Every single day last year. This is a lot of people. I just don't know how you can be. I just don't know how you can be bearish about that scenario. I think we're coming into a scenario. I have an 8-year-old. I think it's an absolutely fantastic time to be 8. I wish I was 8 again, because what we're going to see now for them, it's unimaginable wealth, unimaginable uses of their time, unimaginable creation of new technology. You can see already the generation gap between the old and the new now is as wide as you've ever seen. I think with all this new computer stuff, you know, certainly my grandmother's 96 now, she's still alive, but this technology has just left her behind. She'll never be able to understand it. It's good as good as she is. Okay. I'll leave it there with that. The last thing I would like to say too, comes back to, I'll open up for questions now, I've got a few minutes for questions. Comes back, I might start the process with a question myself. Come back to what somebody had to say before about Greece, and about the problems of some countries defaulting. Yes, there's going to be some various national defaults, but what I urge you to see is that as the real estate cycle turns, and should we get a new upturn happening, which is inevitable because the way the Western economies are constructed, they are still built on the rent, so absolutely nothing can change. So we must get another bubble at some point, another asset price inflation. Once things start to improve, nobody will worry about the problems of the world, of Greece and everything else, because as conditions improve, we start looking forward again. That tends to be what happens. So don't get stuck in the moment about those sort of issues. The other thing, let's go full circle back to this idea about wealth. 40% of America's wealth supposedly destroyed. Well, see, what you have to realise is what was actually destroyed was a claim upon wealth, not wealth itself. Your house and a share certificate is not wealth. It is particularly a share certificate. It is simply a claim upon the wealth that is produced by the company. So that claim upon wealth, it will go up when more people have got money, and it will go down when people have got no confidence. It's our business as investors to be able to work out when's the best time to buy that claim upon wealth. When everybody else wants it, or when nobody else wants it. It's also the other thing as an investor, it's up to you. I think history repeats. I think the world goes in cycles. I think they will repeat and keep repeating. As investors, you are able to work out where you are in each particular cycle, which will then help improve the sort of things that you're trying to do. That's my specialty. That's what I do with the cycles. And that's where I've been so helpful for all the subscribers in the past. So, Yes.
You said, so you were able to quite confidently predict when the serial market peaked and moved, and if you were a share investor, you would have definitely moved out, saying 2.7, 2.6.
I wish I had my computer here. I wish I could go on the internet because I could show you what we did. But if I just go back, there we go. If we go back there. Back one. Back like that. I record all my classes, all the things I've done for subscribers over the years. We had a forecasting class in April of 2007, which is on the section headed classes. And on that class, I said to subscribers quite specifically, one of whom is down there, Joe on the left there, if we had highs around July or August, September of that year, 2007, I made it quite plain, I was cashing out. That's what I did. Okay, now, I feel myself personally, I probably should have done better than I really did, but in a sense, I was completely in cash. I can tell you from a family point of view, the actual knowledge of that in your cycle of family trust point of view, which my father looks after, the wildly profitable. Wildly profitable.
The Australian real estate cycle, it seems like the American real estate market went down 35-40%.
Yes.
Here in Australia, I mean, we've had some upgrading properties and were somewhat affected, but we've had a fairly mild evaluation and pricing.
First up,
real estate, that is. I mean, it's been more severe in certain commercial properties.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Commercial property and real estate investment trusts, they had a major downturn. If you were to ask Eddie Grove if we had a major downturn, he'd tell you it was catastrophic. Because he borrowed and he leveraged at precisely the exact wrong time that you go into leverage. Right at the peak of the cycle, when it's the easiest thing to do. So, commercial real estate investment trusts, they had a normal cycle. Now, if you go back and have a look at the stock market, when it bottomed, 1992, 1974, complete 18-year cycles. Perfect to see if you go back and
so, real estate and shares are sort of following each other. That's pretty.
The thing to know was, my ability seems to have been to teach real estate people how to understand the stock market and to teach stock market people how to understand real estate. Because if you're in the stock market always tanks when real estate collapses. But the thing from a real estate point of view is, why they have to understand the stock market is the stock market leads the process. So if you're in real estate, it's handy to know stock market. You should know how to read a real estate investment trust chart because they will peak way before property prices actually do. Usually it's the stock market and the trust first, then it's land price, then it's real estate. Then by the time the peaks happen, it's all over. If the stock market ever gives you time to panic, it's all over. So that's why it's handy to be different investors, but to know the other side. Very few people know the other side of the coin. Right? That's why it's so significant, I think, to learn, try and learn both sides. Getting back to your Australian point of view, yes, the residential side of things has certainly had, it's not had its downturn that it should have. I still think that we're not out of the woods yet. To know, if I can just go back to the clock for a minute.
So we're about 2 hours behind the American block or something like that.
No, see, this is where you don't have to have opinions. There are no such things as opinions. The stock market will tell you where we are. We're just in an area now. This area here, I can tell you, it's the hardest part of the 18-year cycle to forecast. But what we're waiting for now, what will tell us unequivocally where we are, is we have to wait for the stock markets worldwide on a monthly chart to make a higher bottom or a lower bottom compared to March 2009. We haven't had that yet. On the Dow, from October down to March of last year, the Dow went down 17 months. It then went back up 9 months, back up by 50%, GAN's midpoints, both in time and price. That's incredibly important. Now you can expect, in my view, probably a repeat performance, half the time down. Half of 17 months will be down this year. GAN's decade cycle, the year zero of every decade cycle, January high, September low, almost every time. Go back and have a look at what GAN was saying. It's phenomenal stuff. Chandra here, Chandra's seen it all. You've seen some of that stuff, have you not? It's very impressive, is it not? Yes. Okay, so you want to be looking at that sort of stuff. Okay? So we will know throughout this year, and I know sometimes this isn't so helpful, but we will know this year where we are, but we have to get that higher low or lower low first. From my point of view, if I was to give an opinion, the US market's the only one you've really got to worry about. The rest of the world, UK, Australia, we are not going to get lower lows now. China, they're not going to be lower lows. But the US market still has some problems to work through. We have to see what happens. We'll know that as we go through the year. And once that's in place by about halfway through this year, higher low, lower low, I expect a higher low, then the recent crisis we've had, I can tell you, it's the market telling you it's all over. And then there's no opinion about it at all, because the stock market is the arbitrary final judge. That's the weight of opinion. See? So you don't have to have your own opinion. The market will tell you. But through here, just through there, that's the hardest bit to forecast. You just got to be patient.
So are we
still
not sure where we're at with the property market? Are we expecting...
We have to be patient now. We have to be patient. We have to see what the stock market is going to do this year, whether it makes a lower low than March 2009, or whether it makes a higher low. Yes. If it's a higher low, then Australia and the rest of the world are into the next cycle. And it's my view of that next cycle, Australia will see the most wealth it's ever seen created in its entire history. It's very bullish.
What will be in real life?
Why not? Yes. You see, what has to happen now? See, I urge you, understand this clock. This clock will tell you. For the next real estate cycle to happen, what has to happen now is fundamentally illogical. But what has to happen now for the next cycle to continue? We have to get an increase in inner suburban prices of houses. Because once we get an increase, that then makes it cheaper to build. And all the developers will then start building because it's cheaper to build than to buy.
That's already happening.
Yes, precisely. So we're into the next cycle. Everything's, it's green light flashing. Okay? You've got to know how to read those fundamentals. Homer Hoyt wrote about that in 1933, his thesis for Chicago University. This is, nothing's different. It's happened since then, since 1933. I'm not telling you anything new. And that is how real estate works, because it's built on David Ricardo's law of rent. Now, when you start to get into David Ricardo's law of rent, you'll never see this in a faculty, and you'll never read it from the elite. They don't want you to know. Why? Because they are the collectors of the rent. I go through that in chapter 22 of my book. Very interesting stuff. Questions?
I'll make a comment.
Yes?
Robert Prechter is also into Kondratiev, and he's forecasting blood in the streets.
He's wrong.
He's exact opposite to you.
Yes, because he's dated it incorrectly. The reason why I can date it better than him, if I may speak humbly, doesn't sound so humbly, is because we've got the work of Dan, which gives you his work of highs and lows based on the wind chart. Okay? Now, I could be wrong. Quite openly, I could be wrong. But the people on the ground at the moment in Australia are telling you they are voting, and the markets, they're voting with their feet. And the prices of all of what's happening, the existing buildings, is going up. If that keeps going up, developers are going to start to buy raw land because it's cheaper. That's built on the rent, and that cannot be changed because I know what the cause is, the economic rent. And if you want to know what the economic rent is, study what happened in Canberra. Canberra was built on the foundations of the economic rent, the only city in the world where they ever built on the economic rent. Fabulous history, of which you will not be told what it is now, but it's the power structures of the world. Well, I won't get into that sort of stuff. Yes?
I find the experience of the 18-year cycle interesting in that it's ticking over 18 years now, but it was ticking over 18 years 200 years ago.
Yes.
And the way we do business, the structure of business, the speed of business,
yes.
Everything has changed so dramatically. Why hasn't the 18 years changed?
It's a good question. I don't have the answer to that question. Not yet. I have a view on it, which I can't discuss here because I'd love to be able to do it, but you've got to go to the website, okay? Then you can formulate your own opinion. However, I'll say this though. In 1873, there was a merchant's magazine, and it was trying to go through causes of what the recent depression was, and they couldn't tell why. But everybody at the time, they were just talking about one thing that they all thought had caused the recession, was the telegraph. Because the telegraph was putting out information so fast now, it was beyond the ability of people to conceive, to cope with it, and that caused the depression. What's changed? See, the speed of everything changes, and all that happens, but the fundamental underlying causal reason why you get a cycle hasn't changed, and that's the enclosure of the economic rent. In other words, the rental value is becoming a price which is freely traded. Okay, that hasn't changed. That's why we get another cycle.
How could it be a cycle where we didn't get a low property? We didn't get a low property in Australia.
The world did. The jury's out on Australia yet. I wouldn't. Only residential.
Yeah.
Commercial and real estate investment trusts had major loans. Major loans. It was only residential that did that. And that was government supported. Who knows? I certainly don't. I just simply go by the cycle. And the evidence I'm seeing at the moment is what's happening in Australia on the ground. That's all. Yes?
Bill, in your handout at page 24, you've got the great 18-year real estate cycle.
Yes.
And I can see the pattern that shows 18 years consecutively from 1836 through to 1925.
Yes.
And then we've got a break of 48 years. And then we've got a break of 6.
Yes.
And then we've got a break of 10.
Yes.
And then we get back to 17.
Yes.
That's a bit out of...
I suggest yes, because those figures were taken from an economist who I know quite well, Fred Folbari. Fred Folbari in 1997 put out a very good book, which is listed there, where he forecast the bottom for 2008 in the US. He forecast his reasons why. So the dates come from there. In my book, I go through how I think you should interpret the cycle, and I measure it not only according to just land value, but I measure it according to the yield curve and the prices of copper. So when you match some of those together, it gives you the ability to see through what Fred Folbari and other people, the way they've dated it. Okay, so yes, very good point you've raised there.
I'm just wondering, what were the recessions between 1925 and 1973?
After 1932,
yes.
In America particularly, we got the Second World War. There was still a construction boom that peaked in 1943-44, and it still peaked with the world's It wasn't the tallest building, it was the world's biggest building, which was the Pentagon. So we still had those peaks. In my book, I show how land price bottomed in America in 1955 to then kick off the next cycle. And because construction and everything else kept going, because nobody else, including Fred, didn't measure the land price, it got them out of sync with the cycle. I went ahead and stuck with land price, shows you the bottom in 1955 that led to a peak in 1974, peak in 1971, thereabouts, to low in 1974, the next cycle of peak in 1989, to low in 1992. If you stick with that, you'll find it, you won't have difficulty dating it forward. Land price is the key. Nobody measures it. Okay? Land price is the indicator. It's in the book. Good question.
Any more questions?
How do you measure land price?
Yeah, good question. It's quite simple to do, but all the economists will tell you it's really hard. Valuers do it.
Yeah, the accountants do it.
Yes, they do.
Can I answer that one? I'll tell you what I do. In an Excel spreadsheet, I'll take Melbourne, median house prices that comes out quarterly. Take the median price for the metropolitan area, just take the 2 inches out, track the suburbs that I'm interested in, whack them up on the speed street, and track them.
Yeah.
What's all that mean? With a surprising shock over the last 10 years, peaks and troughs, real estate, I think off the top of my head, but I think it's correct, we've only gone up about 3.75% per annum average. Mm-hmm. If you use that in the dollar.
So that's
dead easy.
Yes, you can. That, of course, includes house price.
Yeah.
Which
oh, yes.
It's okay for our purposes. But I need the land price because towards the end of the cycle, you get the land boom, and it's the raw land that just goes all out of proportion. So that's what I need to see it for. But generally, if you want to value, if you own your own house, And if you want to value it, get your rates notice.
I know it's on there.
Or you could do it another way. You could work out what you think you could sell your house for and land, and also have a look at what you insure your house for, because you don't insure that. You do not insure your location value because it can't be eradicated. So just take off, you deduct your house value, and that gives you your land value. Can easily be done, despite what economists tell you. But there's a vested interest that doesn't want you to know what the land price is, because if you know what the land price is, it becomes easy to tax it.
I was going to say, what about the taxes that the government do that's based on?
Yes, it is, land tax. See, this is the secret, really, to forecasting. And forecasting, really, just about anything you want to know. If you tax land enough, you eradicate the price, but not the use value. And then you could live in an economy where the price of land was actually zero. But this concept is so far removed from people now that nobody can ever possibly conceive of it. But Canberra was founded on that principle, to make land price zero. Okay.
All right. Phil.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming along and showing us those.
That's my pleasure.
And something for us to your trouble. The savour, enjoy and relax. Thank you. Alright, just quickly wind up with the housekeeping. Next meeting is the 17th of April here. Subject matter unknown, haven't worked out.